Well, Mr. Holmes, what can I say? You saved me from making a fool of myself. Even if between the two of you, you and the Rigoletti woman broke half the laws on the statute books tonight.
Oh, nonsense, Lestrade. And that's no way to speak of a respectable lady and a concerned citizen.
I suppose you want me to apologise to her.
I want you to do only what your conscience dictates.
So I hope you understand, ma'am. I had to do my duty. What's past is past, I do accept that, but, well, if you look at it from my point of view...
Inspector, please. There's not a word more to be said. To err is human. And even detectives are allowed to be human sometimes.
Well, in that case, ma'am, I'll wish you a very good night. Good night to you, Mr. Holmes.
Lestrade.
Good night, Inspector. And thank you again. Oh, do you know, he's really rather sweet if you look at him in the right light.
The light doesn't exist which could make me describe Lestrade as sweet.
I don't think you've ever thought of anyone as sweet. Not in your entire life. You should unbend a bit, you know. Let that mask slip from time to time. You might actually enjoy it. Thank you for everything you've done.
You took an enormous risk tonight.
It was quite like old times, even if it was all for nothing. You'd already found proof that he did it.
Well, on the contrary. I had the sack, but I could never have proved that it was the Colonel who buried it. It was only because my evidence came on top of yours that he decided to confess.
So, it took the two of us.
And we achieved the result you wanted.
Justice for Mr. Catterall. I probably shouldn't be saying this in the shadow of Scotland Yard, but when I was standing there with Upwood and I had my gun in my hand, I don't know why I didn't pull the trigger.
I think you do.
Well, maybe I do. I should go.
A very good night to you, Mrs. Rigoletti.
And to you, Mr. Holmes. You know...
What?
If you do ever feel like a change from dear Dr. Watson...
A change?
Bear in mind that I like opera, too.
Oh, when constabulary duty's to be done, a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
I rather enjoyed that.
Yes, I thought you might. Home?
Home.
In the striking success of Miss Franny Blossom, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine, and Dr. John Watson by Andrew Sachs. Colonel Upwood was played by Geoffrey Whitehead, Mrs. Rigoletti by Maggie Steed, and Inspector Lestrade by Stephen Thorne. Harold Upwood was played by Scott Brooksbank, Catterall by Philip Fox, Nicholson by John Rowe, and the maid by Alice Hart. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The striking success of Miss Franny Blossom was written by Bert Cools, from a reference in the novel The Hound of the Baskervilles by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The director was Patrick Rayner.
The world's greatest wild beast circus welcomes you one and all. We present tonight a feast for your eyes, unsurpassed by any in the Empire or without it. The most ferocious of beasts. The most death-defying of...
I tell you straight, Jimmy, I don't think I can stick this much longer.
How many times have we heard this, Mrs. Rhonda?
Try not to think about it.
No. But who can put up with that swaggering bully day in, day out?
I can, Leonardo.
Well, you have to. But I'm not his wife.
Can't his money buy your loyalty?
No, only our bodies and souls.
That you of all people should ask.
That's my cue.
Now, one day soon you'll find you're the only act left on the bill. You know that.
Do you think yourself strong enough to break free of him, Leonardo?
Strong? Oh, yeah, he's the strong man, isn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe one of the animals will do for him first.
Sad thing, though. Strong man's all he is.
The Queen of the Night and the King of the Beasts!
Coward! Coward! You coward!
The Veiled Lodger by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Harriet Walter as Eugenia Rhonda and Douglas Henshall as Leonardo. The Veiled Lodger.
Mrs. Marilow.
Hey, Albert.
What's it to be then this morning? Extra quart? Because I know when you have a lodger in, you want a little drop of milk extra for his tea, don't you? Over and above.
Oh, any excuse to drum up a bit more business, that's you, eh?
No, but you see, if the milk don't get drunk, what then happens to the poor cows? It's a social duty.
Well, it happens. I'll have to disappoint them, Albert, and take a quart as usual. Here. Seeing as how my new lodger is so ladylike as to take her tea weak without milk.
I hope you don't start that too as a habit, Mrs. Marilow. Put me out of business, that will.
Albert! The jackal! What is it?
Dear God!
It is indeed a surprising story.
So, in the end, it was me suggested coming to you, Mr. Holmes.
And it was well thought of, Mrs. Merrilow. But I wish to make it clear now. I have no intention of coming alone to South Brixton.
Well, someone out for your blood, sir. Some criminal murderer.
No. You've been perhaps too much influenced by sensation of the kind with which my friend Watson panders to the public taste.
Oh, no, sir. The newspapers.
Oh, the press. I've read only one true statement there in my life, and that was a mistake.
Holmes?
Ah, but someone's found its man, I see. Come in, my dear fellow, and bid good morning to Mrs. Merrilow of South Brixton.
Mrs. Merrilow?
My friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Doctor? Good day to you, sir.
If you wish to indulge your filthy habits, Watson, Mrs. Merrilow has no objection to tobacco.
No, none at all, Doctor.
Yeah, just as well. I could smell the smoke-laden atmosphere from the street.
Oh. Mrs. Merrilow has something of an interesting story to tell.
Well, anything I can do, you know.
You'll understand, madam, that I should prefer to have a witness.
Well, certainly, if you say so.
And you'll have to make your lodger understand that before we arrive.
Well, Lord bless you, sir. She's that anxious to see you. You might as well bring the whole parish at your heels, so long as you come.
Good, good, good. Well, I should like to go over the facts once more, to be certain we have them correct, and to acquaint Watson here with your peculiarly secretive lodger.
I'm all ears, Mrs. Merrilow.
Well, it's like Mrs. Rhonda said, sir. From the very moment when she first walked through my door...
Privacy, Mrs. Merrilow. That is all I wish for. And I'm more than ready to pay for it.
Well, I trust the situation may prove pleasing, ma'am. Set back from the road as we are.
Yes. More private than most. That is how it must be. You have no other lodger?
No. I only ever take the one, ma'am. And I've no family now since my old Matthew passed over.
Your husband?
Widowed now for nigh on 10 years. But it does get easier to put up with the loss, you know.
Does it?
Oh, yes. Well, you'll be private here, ma'am, if you want to be.
I imagine you would like some money in advance,
well,
Mrs. Merrilow.
Would be much appreciated, ma'am. 2 weeks.
Let us
just
say
be
a quarter's rent to begin with.
A quarter?
More, if you wish. Though it would not be...
No, no, a quarter would be very acceptable. But you'd be wanting to see the room before you part with money.
I can tell what it will be without seeing it. That it be private is my only wish.
Well, if you say so. Ma'am?
Now, £1, two, three.
She counted out the quarter there and then. Hard cash, never known it of a lodger.
If only all accounts were so promptly settled. Oh, but Mrs. Merrillow, you've omitted to give Watson here the most salient fact pertaining to your lodger.
Oh, sir, so I didn't. And yet it's such a strange thing, I'm amazed I let my tongue run off in another direction, so to speak.
Your story is already most intriguing, Mrs.
Doctor,
Merrillow.
The fact of the matter is, this lady, Mrs. Rhonda, never raises her veil.
Never? Not even in her own room.
The truth is, Watson, the veiled lady has lodged these 7 years in Mrs. Merrillow's house without her landlady ever having seen her face until a few days ago.
And I wish to Hanover, gentlemen, that I'd never seen her face at all.
My dear Lord. Poor man. Coroner's verdict, death by drowning. So he is at peace. And I am.
I just popped up to see if you might have finished with the illustrated. Why, Mrs. Rhonda, what's the matter
here? Oh, my great goodness. Mrs. Rhonda! You see it now, Mrs. Merrillow. And know at last why it is that I never raise my veil.
Her features, I understand, were most terribly mutilated.
Well, now, Mr. Holmes and Doctor, which you'd hardly say she has a face at all. That's how it looked. Our milkman got a sight of it once. Milk all over the front garden. That's the kind of face it is.
What a horrible thing for a woman. Do you know how it happened?
She never said. I didn't like to ask.
In fact, Mrs. Merrillow, you know nothing about her history.
Well, you can understand how she might not wish to speak of it.
Yes, indeed. But you could have gathered some notion of it from her references when she came.
Well, she didn't present any.
Oh, surely it's usual.
She paid a quarter's rent, sir, right down on the table in advance, and in these times it's a richer woman than me can afford to turn that
And
down.
She never showed you her face. From first to last.
Except on that one accidental occasion.
That's what I say, gentlemen.
A most remarkable story.
I'm not surprised you should want Mr. Holmes to examine the business.
Oh, don't, sir.
But then why...
If it was for me, I'd have left well alone, and that's the truth. So long as I get my rent, which I do, I'm more than satisfied. Or you couldn't have a quieter lodger than Mrs. Rhonda, nor one who causes less trouble.
And something else has brought matters to a head.
Oh, my
you
sweet gracious! Mrs. Rhonda! Mrs. Rhonda! A nightmare, was it? Here, I'll put some honey in.
Thank you.
Oh, look at you, Mum. You've hardly ate these last 3 weeks. And last night you were crying out again, fair ringing through the house. Sent the shivers through me, I can tell you.
Sorry.
You're wasting away. Well, you've forgotten to stir it. Oh, now, Mrs. Rhonda, it's my guess you have something that's troubling your soul. Well, there's the clergy for that.
Oh.
And if not them, there's the police.
For God's sake, Mrs. Merrillow, not the police.
Well, I should say between the one and the other, you should be able to get some help, some peace.
Not the police. And the clergy can't change what is past.
Well, then... I don't know what's to be done for you, I'm sure.
Nothing, perhaps. Yet I've lived 7 years with my dead secret. Long enough. It would ease my mind now if someone could only learn the truth before I die.
And then Well, says I, if you won't have the regulars, there is this detective man we read about, begging your pardon, Mr. Holmes.
Not at all.
And Mrs. Rhonda, she fair jumps at it. That's the man, says she. Bring him here, Mrs. Merrilow. Bring him here at once. And just in case you wasn't inclined to come, she said, I should give you this.
Abbas Parva.
Does that mean anything to you?
Give him that name, she says, and tell him, too, that I am the wife of Rhonda's wild beast show. If he's the man I think he is, that will bring him.
And it will, too. We shall come early in the afternoon, Mrs. Merrilow, after I've had a little chat with Dr. Watson.
And lunch, I hope.
We shall say about 3 o'clock, then, at your house.
Well, until then, gentlemen.
Allow me, Mrs. Merrilow.
Oh, Lord bless you, sir. I'm a landlady, me. I don't need seen out by a doctor. Thanking you all the same.
Until this afternoon, then.
I expect so, gentlemen. Yes.
Very good, Watson. Very good. I shall need A, R and C from the year 88. And you could usefully dismember the cold partridge you'll find upon the sideboard.
Shall I pour this as well?
Yes, what is it?
Mon Rocher. Doesn't really go with
James. Yes, pour away, whatever you think, my dear fellow. Now, Abbas Parva. Have you no recollection of that?
No, none.
Yes, yet you were with me then. Oh, here we are, yes. November of 88. My notes here in the margins, yes. Yes, I remember the case worried me at the time. But I could make nothing of the tragedy beyond a conviction that the coroner's verdict was mistaken.
Perhaps, Holmes, you could give me the facts.
My impression was really very superficial. None of the parties had engaged my services. What were you doing then?
November of 88? Might it have been that Japanese business? The politician and the lighthouse?
And the trained cormorant, yes, of course. But you must have heard of Barrington Rhonda. His circus was a household word.
Yeah, certainly. It used to be said he rivaled even Womwell and Sanger.
In his day, Watson, Rhonda was accounted one of the greatest showmen in the empire. Mm. By the time of the Abbas Parva tragedy, both he and his world's greatest wild beast circus were on the downgrade.
Debt.
Drink. Or so it was claimed in evidence.
They are a low lot as a whole, these show people. Wasn't it Rhonda's troupe which fought the great pitch battle with Raphael's travelling theatre company?
On most accounts, it was typical of the man. Though, unusually, Rhonda's caravan came off the worse on that occasion.
I recall they had to flee the field.
A mob of actors came close to letting out his greatest wild beasts from their cages.
The Battle of Wimbledon Common, they called it.
Well, it was to Wimbledon Rhonda was bound again that November of 88, when his caravan halted at a small Berkshire village.
Abbas Parva.
We were camping there just the one night, Your Honour.
You had no permission to exhibit, is that correct?
Well, what would have been the point in asking? I mean, the place is that small, we'd have lost sixpence for every penny we took. Yeah. Even if we'd been allowed to show, which isn't likely.
Your permission to rest the night was conditional upon your seemly behaviour, is that so?
We're working folk, sir. Not a band of tinkers.
Nevertheless, you have been responsible for a most regrettable uproar.
Well, no, sir. We work hard on the road and in our shows. And acrobats and clowns labour just as hard as strong men like me. Though there's plenty who don't, or won't, believe it.
Do you number Mr. Rhonda among those people?
Well, he knew well the value of every beast and man in that circus, sir.
Now, you mention the beast, Mr. Leonardo. The lion.
The most magnificent and fearsome creature in captivity, ladies and gentlemen. See them teeth? £100 a minute a week they tear apart, and never a visit to any dentist, madam. Imagine that! See them paws? Claws? As long as this, madam, you scratch his back, he'll scratch yours. And how? 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 But even the king of beasts can be subdued by beauty. Come forth, Eugenia, queen of the night. Ladies and gentlemen, would you lay down with Zahara King? Trust your life beneath those mighty paws, or would you dare kiss those slavering lips? Into the very cage she steps so lightly. Who knows? But she'll be dead in a second.
Here, you see? A photograph of the performance.
Mm, magnificent.
The lion?
The woman. That costume.
I knew you couldn't be referring to the man with her.
That's Rhonda, is it?
Yes. By some accounts, his appetites were as huge and porcine as his person.
The lion is quite a specimen, too.
Sahara King, by name. The high point of their circus performance was generally adjudged to be that at which Mrs. Rhonda actually put her head between his jaws. Mm,
dangerous in the extreme.
Well, it seems Rhonda and his wife believed the beast would never molest them.
Familiarity begat contempt.
Between them, they alone fed Sahara King, usually at night. They never allowed anybody else to do it. Speaking of which, I'll take some of that partridge, Watson, if you'd be so kind.
They believed, so long as they were the food carriers, the beast would regard them as benefactors. It's an argument. It has merit.
Well, according to what was deposed at the subsequent inquest, on that particular night, 7 years ago, Barrington and Eugenia Rhonda went together to feed this king of the beasts.
Will you open the cage?
You do it. It's you he likes best to see, isn't it?
Can you wonder at it?
Feed him and let's get to bed. Something special for the beast tonight.
Oh, my sweet God! Leonardo! Leonardo!
Who's it, Jimmy?
Everybody! Elliot, quick!
For God's sake, help get it off her!
He'll kill us! He'll bloody kill us! Oh, well, for my life! Get some more poles to fend it off!
Coward!
Leave her!
Coward!
Leave her!
Coward!
Rhonda was dead at once, I suppose.
The back of his head crushed in. Deep claw marks across his scalp.
20 trenchant gashes.
5.
And Mrs. Rhonda?
No one thought she could live. The creature had savaged her so. She still had the framework of a face, but the face itself was gone.
Oh, and she had much to lose. Poor woman.
The inquest was held 6 months later, delayed till she could give evidence.
Misadventure?
The obvious verdict.
What alternative could be conceived?
You may well say so, Watson.
Mr. Holmes! Mr. Holmes!
Wait, cabby!
Your landlady said I might just catch you if I was quick. Edmonds of the Berkshire Constabulary.
I'm in rather a hurry.
There are one or two points which worry me about the Abbas Parva verdict, Mr. Holmes.
Ah, there's a coincidence. Would you care to ride, Mr. Edmonds? I can allow you to take up the time needed for this journey.
I'm very obliged to you, sir.
Drive on, cabby.
You followed the affair?
In the newspapers.
Then you'll be familiar with the facts of the tragedy.
With what are said to be the facts of it.
That's not quite the same thing.
No, it isn't.
And you're right. That's what worries me. It's so deucedly difficult to reconstruct the affair in a way that makes sense.
Two people are struck down by a lion they thought would do them no harm. Mr. Rhonda was killed by a single blow of the creature's paw. Then it turned upon his wife and opened the door to its cage. That is what the inquest established, yet you have doubts?
I do, Mr. Holmes. Very grave doubts.
I should like to hear them.
I think, sir, you should look at it from the lion's point of view.
A smart lad, Edmonds. He had the same reservations as I did myself. He should have gone far in the service.
And did he not?
After a fashion. He died of fever in Allahabad.
Look at it from the lion's point of view. A novel deductive method?
But instructive, Watson. Imagine, Mrs. Rhonda opens the door to the cage. The lion is liberated. What does he do? He bounds forward, half a dozen strides, and he's upon Rhonda and strikes him down.
Rhonda must have turned to fly, since the claw marks were to the back of his head.
A sensible lion would have bounded on to escape. A hungry lion could have taken the food the Rhondas were bringing him. But no, this lion, Watson. This lion turns, goes back to the cage, knocks the woman over, and chews up her face.
But is it reasonable to expect logical action of a wild beast?
No, perhaps not. But of a woman? She screamed, Watson. She called, coward, coward, over and over again, even in the delirium of agony as they carried her back to her caravan.
But what could a poor devil of a husband have done to help her, since she saw him killed?
You see the difficulty. As did Inspector Edmonds.
Look, Inspector, you're just asking questions we don't have any answers to. I mean, I'm not a wild animal man, me.
Even the clowns help with the menagerie, though, don't they, Mr. Griggs?
That doesn't mean to say I understand its acting the way it did.
It's a wild animal, Mr. Edmonds, when all said and done.
What about the lady's screams?
Well, that's what roused us, isn't it?
Yeah, we all came charging out of our beds when we heard the roaring, that's right.
The lion mauling Mrs. Ron.
Yeah, and the man shouting.
There was shouting as well, a man's voice.
Yeah, terrified yelling it
well,
was.
Well, that must have been Rhonda himself, mustn't it? In any case, the whole camp was crying out pretty soon.
I imagine it was, Leonardo.
Then when we found Mrs. Rhonda, dear God.
You two led the men to drive the beast back into its cage, yes?
Me and Jimmy did it, that's right.
The strong man and the clown, brave men.
Well, we did what we could for her, Inspector. I wish to God it could have been more.
I'm sure you did your best.
That's the evidence they gave at the inquest.
More or less.
Do you doubt it, Edmund?
Do you?
Certainly.
I knew you would. You see, that's why I came to you, Mr. Holmes. More than one witness spoke at that inquest of a man's terrified shouting, mingled with the woman's screams. And how could that have been Rhonda, lying as he was with his skull smashed in?
You got no more out of the circus folk.
It's a closed world. They protect their own.
They have to. Often against the mob.
There was something else, too. All the time, they talked only about her.
Mrs. Rhonda.
Her injuries, her cries, her life and how they fought to save it.
Yet he was their employer.
You can understand their pressing need to capture the lion, save the woman. But Rhonda, dead though he was, I don't think they paid him any heed till long after.
I apologise, Inspector. I must leave you here. I have an appointment. Unfinished business with a shuffleman and an alabaster virgin.
I mustn't keep you then.
No, the cabbie will take you back to Paddington. You didn't really expect me to solve your case, did you? On the evidence we possess?
I don't know that there is a solution, Mr. Holmes.
Well, you have my agreement, at least.
I should say that's enough, sir. But there's one other person in England who knows it. Because there's something rotten about this Abbas Parva tragedy.
I don't think so, necessarily.
You have a theory?
Well,
I should be glad to consider it.
I can picture Mr. and Mrs. Rhonda together on their way to the lion's cage. They were 10 yards from it when the beast got loose.
Let's go on.
The man turned to fly and was struck down. The woman ran for her only refuge, the cage. If she could get in and shut the door in time, she was safe.
The lion was quicker.
Mm. After, in her delirium, she returned to her feelings of anger with her husband. She called coward upon him for having encouraged the lion's attack.
Encouraged it in what
the
way?
The animal would rejoice in the man's terror. By turning to run, he caused the tragedy. Mrs. Rhonda would have blamed her injuries upon his cowardice.
You mean, had they faced the lion together, they would have cowed it?
Mm. Well, wasn't that part of their act? At every performance here?
Huh. Brilliant, Watson. You deserve some more moral shame.
It's empty.
Yes, there is only one flaw in your diamond. If the Rhondas were together, 10 paces from the cage, when the beast got loose, how did it?
I suppose you could argue the need for a third person.
Ah, exactly. And then we know that Sahara King was so well used to the Rhondas, it would play quite happily with them, do tricks inside its cage with them. There's no shortage of witnesses to that. Why should it attack them so suddenly, so savagely?
Perhaps if we allow the existence of a third person.
You surmise that he or she could have enraged the lion so as to cause this unprecedented attack.
I don't know. Did Mr. Rhonda have enemies?
Rivals. Any number of them would be only too pleased to see the end of Rhonda's, but not this way, Inspector. Nobody could wish that.
So, what will happen now?
Well, look around. You're the detective officer. Do you see a circus anymore?
Could it not be carried on?
For what? Can you run Rhonda's world's greatest wild beast circus without Rhonda's? When you've had Sahara King shot?
Leonardo, how could he have been allowed to live?
Well, what mercy to let her live. In there. Like to be queen of a night which will never end.
The doctors hope for her.
There'll be no grand finale again, Inspector. No showman left. No show. So we sell up what we can and move on.
But if she lives, she'll need to be
it's
looked after.
It's not up to me. She'll not want, anyway. Top's new enough, there's good gear, someone will buy it.
You've woken her with your shouting.
Well, how can you tell Jimmy if her eyes are even open?
She says she'll see you, Inspector.
If you're ready.
Can Mrs. Ronda help me, do you think?
She can only help herself, I'm sure.
When you can look on her, Leonardo, then you can be the bravo.
Have you not?
Never. Since that night.
Has she asked for me?
No.
Well, then.
But you, who saved her? You could at least speak to her now.
I can't. Won't. You can't force me.
Strong man.
Look, Inspector, I work on myself. My body is my work. Every day I'll make it perfect for people to see, and I can't bear to look upon something that was perfect and now it's ruined.
Strong man.
A mad blood rage in a lion.
Yes. Well, I have to see her, I suppose.
Not too long, Inspector, if you please. And so, you're leaving.
Oh, what can I do, Jimmy?
Well, what can you?
She's destroyed. I didn't save her.
And so you're off?
Yes, I am.
Do you remember my dog?
That little bitch, had by every mongrel in the land.
Yeah. Remember how you walked away when Rhonda took her pups?
And it's long past time now. I left another of that man's messes, and so what?
Rhonda laughed as he drowned them.
What could I do?
All right. You go your way now. But if mine ever crosses it again, Leonardo, I swear I'll serve you like that dog.
It's unusual to have a second chance at solving a puzzle.
You hardly got a first opportunity, since you weren't engaged to pursue the Abbas Parvin affair.
My dear fellow, you are the most admirable protector of my reputation.
Dr. Watson? Mr. Holmes?
Good afternoon.
Mrs. Merrillo.
Mrs. Ronda's all ready to receive you, gentlemen. Up the stairs, if you please.
Thank you. We will see her at once, then. If you please.
But before I do let you in, Mr. Holmes, I beg you'll not say or do anything to upset her.
But we're here at Mrs. Ronda's own request.
I thought she'd be happy to know you were on your way, gentlemen, when I got back this morning. But if anything, she's more miserable now than when she sent me.
You needn't concern yourself, Mrs. Merrillo. Your lodger shall not be lost to you on our account.
It wasn't that, Mr. Holmes, was uppermost in my mind.
Of course not.
Though I should miss the money.
You may rely upon our discretion, Mrs. Merrillo.
Just so that you know, gentlemen, how concerned I am for my poor lady.
Mrs. Ronda.
You speak my name as though it were not unfamiliar to you, Mr. Holmes.
I am here because of it, madam. At your request.
I thought it would bring you. And you are welcome too, Dr. Watson.
Mrs. Ronda.
Was it from Inspector Edmonds that you learned at the time of my interest in the case?
I fear I lied to that gentleman. Perhaps it would have been wiser had I told him the truth.
It is usually so.
It's easy to think that 7 years on.
Why did you lie to Edmonds?
I was still recovering my health when he examined me.
Is that the reason?
No.
Someone else's fate depended upon your lies.
Oh, I knew he was a very worthless being, gentlemen. Yet I would not have his destruction upon my conscience.
He was close to you?
So close. So close.
But now your silence is to be broken. The impediment removed.
He's dead. Yes.
You could then have gone to the police to tell them.
No, sir. I could not even now do that.
There is another person to be considered.
Myself.
Mrs. Ronda.
I'll not have this case ready for another few minutes. I'll have time to talk then, Leonardo.
What do you think your husband sent me over to see how good a job you was making?
He'd come himself fast enough if he wanted. Where is he, do you know?
Him and Jimmy Griggs had just seen off a poor mag's men and a couple of his butlers. Smashed his EO table over his head, they did.
Why aren't you helping them?
They don't need no professional strongman, Mrs. Ronda. Not to duff a Charlie pitcher or two, for all it's good sport.
I hope they'll be safe.
No fear. You can rely on Jimmy to hold your man back. If he wants to go too far, like.
You know Mr. Ronda's temper.
So do you, don't you?
How shouldn't I, since I became his wife?
That was an evil moment.
Oh, you like that, don't you? Eh? Let's see what we got here tonight, shall we? What marks shall we give for this, then? Top marks. Dark, isn't it? Queen of the night. Dark. can't see a damn thing in this pitch. Here. Limelight. Dance in the limelight. Perform. See what marks we'll give tonight. Moths around a flame. Oh, why struggle, my darling? Yes, not as if you're going anywhere.
No.
The marriage bonds. You'll jump this broomstick and like it.
Please, please.
Oh, good marks tonight. Time to give the lion what he wants.
Don't speak of it, Leonardo. What good does it do?
Didn't you know him before that?
Look, I was brought up on the sawdust. Not like you, a man who could come to it because you wanted. I was doing springs through a hoop before I was 10.
Look at you now. Queen of his night.
Yes, and clear out of animal litter when the shows are over. And that Leonardo is still a world removed from how I was before Barrington Rondo loved me.
Can you call what he gives you love, Eugenia?
Don't call me that.
Mrs. Rondo, then. Mrs. Rondo, the showman's wife.
I don't want to be that different. I didn't ask. When Rondo wanted me, I was only just a woman. I was poor.
You made a bad bargain, didn't you?
I've got this cage to finish.
This is the strong man, Leonardo.
The man who said at the inquest, "Forgive me, Mrs. Rondo."
That is Leonardo.
Magnificent physique.
A professional acrobat, almost an archetype.
Self-possessed and smile. A man with a string of friends.
Conquests, yes. That is Leonardo. Here.
Now, this face I know.
Hyperion to a satyr.
What?
Your husband.
Their pictures will help you to understand, gentlemen. The scandal I could not bear if I took my story to the police. The publicity and what would be said of me. Yet I must have somebody understand when I'm gone.
Well, I had better warn you now, madam. Since you might then wish to reconsider your intention to speak, it is not in my power to offer absolution, nor can I promise unconditional discretion.
I know you to be a man of judgment, Mr. Holmes.
But also a responsible one, Mrs. Rondo. My duty might still be to refer you to the police, even having heard your story.
I will take my chance.
You are wise to trust a Holmes, madam.
You compliment me by your faith. So, Mrs. Rondo, this Leonardo...
You see what he was like.
Perhaps we don't all look upon him with the same eyes.
Well, I may say to you, gentlemen, he was the angel Gabriel to me.
Eugenia.
I have only a moment, Leonardo.
It's not enough to be snatching time like we have to.
What? It's all I have. Do you want to cross him?
I would, if it was for myself. To do what he does to you, a woman, that monster, that ruffian.
Not a woman, Leonardo.
A woman who is my friend. I wish you would let me protect you.
How? What can you do for me?
He's afraid of me. He's a coward as well as a bully.
And all the rest. You can't avenge me by hurting him, strong man as you are. You can't attack a man for his treatment of his own wife, however bad.
Put me to the test.
What would be said of us both if I did?
Well, and so?
You'd like it to be said, wouldn't you?
He beats you.
Wouldn't you?
He treats you as he mistreats the animals, Eugenia.
Don't call me that.
Again and again he's had up in court for cruelty to the beasts, assaults and drunken brawls, beatings, maulings, thumb crushings, all his stock in trade.
Who cares? Things go well. He has plenty of money for the fines.
Yeah, and you suffer the more.
So what will you do, Mr. Strongman? By the law, he's within his rights.
It's not justice that he goes in the dock for harm to beasts and not to
justice.
You.
Justice? Don't look for it. But you understand this as I do. I'm less than livestock to him, and by my own choice. I'm his wife, less than his property. Don't look at me like that.
Eugenia.
No.
He shouldn't be allowed to live.
Eugenia.
Here I am.
Prettying yourself up, are you?
If you wish it.
Let's see it, then. See how much better you're getting at covering yourself with slack.
I have to for the performance.
Oh, yes. Perform for your strong man.
Don't be a fool.
You know who I've been with?
No.
My Kate. Down at the River Street. She likes me. Don't you have anything to say to that?
What do you want me to say?
You haughty bitch. With your eyes for all the strong men. I come back to you. I'm tired. What kind of welcome do I get? Your husband.
The best I can bring myself to give.
Oh, you can do better than that. Hand it down to me.
No. No, Barrington.
Take it down and hand it to me, I say.
No.
My Kate. She takes it hard.
That poor woman. She's getting it hot and strong again tonight.
I can't listen to this.
Well, then why do you? You torment yourself, Leonardo, and to no purpose. Rhonda's drunk again. You can pity his poor woman, but it's better he takes it out on his own, isn't it?
Say that again, Jimmy Griggs, and you'll find your grinning clown's face in Sahara King's mouth.
Look, if you're going to suffer, old man, there are better ways than this. Hanging about round her caravan wheels, listening to that.
I love her.
You're a fool.
And you're a damn coward. You loathe him?
Yeah, as much as any man or woman in the troop, or beast if it comes to that. And more than enough of the best are left already because of it.
Shows downhill to Carey Street, that's what.
So leave. Why don't you? You've got cause. He's lashed out at us all.
I can't.
Well then. Meantime, he's our master. Don't forget it.
Kill him.
Oh, for God's sake.
If he's hurt...
You know he is.
Enjoy the show, Leonardo.
One day, Mr. Rhonda, she'll be revenged upon you.
Till then, I'm still Mr. Rhonda. Eh?
Leonardo.
Good night. Good night to one and all. Glory to thee, my God, this night, for all the blessings of the light.
I was in hell, and he, the devil who tormented me.
You have been cruelly used.
It is an abominable way for any man to behave.
But all too common.
I hope not.
Have you been married, Mr. Holmes?
My friend Watson.
Then you will know how a man feels, Doctor.
It is not done.
Oh, I assure you, sir, it has been done to me.
So you planned that your husband should die?
You anticipate me.
It is obvious. You and your lover plotted to kill your husband. How formidable in his bestiality he may have been, but I think the police yet may have a right to learn.
You shall not do this.
I did not promise discretion, Watson.
Go now, then, sir, if you will not hear out my story. I'm sorry I ever thought you might understand. No, I was a fool to think that you might care.
At least you could allow the condemned woman a last word, Holmes.
Very well. But I hold to my conditions, Mrs. Rhonda.
If you will.
You will tell me it was Leonardo's plan, won't you?
Not to excuse myself, Mr. Holmes, for I was prepared to go with him every inch of the way. But I should never have had his wit, never have thought of such a plan.
There. Weighted with lead. It'll go through steel plate, never mind a man's skull.
That is a fearsome weapon.
You don't have to watch.
I want to see it done. To see him dead.
Like this. See? 5 nails. Just the spread of the lion's paw.
Come here. So, when?
When you want.
Tonight.
Brave woman.
Strong man.
And a lion to take the blame.
Will you open the cage?
You do it. It's you he likes best to see, isn't it?
Can you wonder at it?
Feed him and let's get to bed. Something special.
Why were you so slow?
Open the cage, quick!
Help me!
Oh, my God! Xavier!
Oh, get this please, somebody!
Help! Help us! Somebody!
Help me!
I need someone! And a temple!
Oh, my God! Don't you need me!
He could have saved you. Leonardo, he had the club.
You could not have known how poor a spirit was hidden in that splendid body.
I've heard how quick lions can be to scent human blood and how it excites them.
The coward. He turned and ran.
And at the same instant, I felt the lion's teeth meet in my face. I should have died then. It would have been more merciful.
But they saved you. Those men who valued you.
You think I should be grateful to them? When I looked in the mirror and saw myself, I cursed them for my rescue.
Better to have cursed the lion.
Oh, I did, sir. Not because he'd torn away my beauty, but because he'd not torn away my life. So I've caged myself, gentlemen, now. I have money enough. No one I've ever known shall find me. A poor wounded beast that has crawled into its hole to die.
Poor girl.
Holmes?
What of the man Leonardo?
Nothing.
You could have brought him to the gallows.
I loved him, Doctor. He pitied me and helped me, and I loved as I'd never hoped. It's not so easily set aside.
He deserted you, Mrs. Rhonda.
How could he love the thing that Lion had left? We carried freaks to show around the country. He might as soon have tried to love one of them.
You speak of him in the past.
Yes. He's dead last month. Drowned. I saw it in the paper.
So you stood 7 years between Leonardo and his fate. Despite everything.
You did not promise me your discretion, Mr. Holmes.
No more I did, Mrs. Rhonda.
Well, I care little what you may do now.
One thing. The five-clawed club.
Yes, the most ingenious feature of all your story.
What became of it?
I cannot tell you. There was a chalk pit near our camp, a deep green pool at its base. Perhaps there.
Oh, well. It's of little consequence. The case is closed.
Yes. The case is closed.
Your life is not your own, Mrs. Rhonda. Keep your hands off it.
What use is it?
How can you tell?
The example of patient suffering.
Mr. Holmes, I wonder if you could bear this.
Dear God. Poor girl.
I keep seeing her eyes.
Yes.
They were beautiful. In the midst of that ruin.
The world is a cruel jest, Watson.
But there is some compensation hereafter, isn't there?
There is some now. Here. Be careful.
Prussic acid.
It came by post this morning. With a note.
I send you my temptation. I will follow your advice.
Leonardo was right. She is a brave woman.
In The Veiled Lodger, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. With Harriet Walter as Eugenia, and Douglas Henshall as Leonardo. Rhonda was played by Ian Masters, Griggs by Michael Tudor Barnes, Inspector Edmonds and Murphys by Oliver Senton, Harbinson, Coroner and Beamish by Peter Yap, and Mrs. Merrillow by Kristen Millward. The violinists were Leonard Friedman and Mari Campbell. The Veiled Lodger was dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. The production assistant was Joan Raffin, and the director was Patrick Rayner.
It's all very intriguing, but I'm not clear yet what you want me to do in this matter, Mr. Mason. Can't you make it more definite?
Perhaps this will make it more definite, Mr. Holmes.
Perhaps it will. Good Lord. A charred fragment of bone. Where did you get it?
There's a central heating furnace in the cellar beneath Lady Beatrice's room. Harvey, he's one of the stable lads, has charge of it. He found the bone when he was raking the cinders this morning. He didn't like the look of it.
Nor do I. What do you make of it, Watson?
It's the upper condyle of a human femur.
Exactly what I thought. These are deep waters, Mr. Mason. And rather murky. ¶¶
Shoscombe Old Place by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Nicholas Leprevo as John Mason and Donald Pickering as Sir Robert Norbiton. Shoscombe Old Place.
It's glue, Watson.
Glue?
Yes, unquestionably. Glue. Well, take a look through the microscope.
I really don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, see for yourself. Have a look at the scattered objects in the field.
You mean the black lines and the grey bits and the blobby things?
Blobby things? The black lines are threads from a tweed coat. The irregular grey masses are dust. There are epithelial scales on the left.
Epithelial?
Epithelial.
Epithelium. The cell tissue which invests the outer surface of the body and the mucous membranes connected with it.
Or in plain English, dandruff. And the brown blobs, as you call them, are glue.
I'm happy to take your word for it. Is there actually a point to any of this, Holmes?
It's a very fine demonstration. Now, you recall the St. Pancras case?
The policeman who was shot down outside the buffet on platform one.
A cap was found beside his body. The man who was accused of the murder has persistently denied that it was his. But he's a picture maker and probably uses glue every day. The man's as good as hanged.
Is this one of your cases, Holmes?
Oh, goodness, no. Mary Vale of the Yard asked me to look into it. Since I ran down that coiner by the zinc and copper filings and the seam of his cuff, they've come to realise the importance of the microscope. Yes, it's a fascinating aid to detection.
Oh, yes.
What time is it, Watson?
A 11:15.
Yes, I'm expecting a client, but it's overdue. I believe, Watson, that you know something of racing.
I ought to. I pay for it with about half my war wound pension.
I knew I could rely on you. You shall be my handy guide to the turf.
I don't follow you.
Does the name Sir Robert Norbiton mean anything to you?
I should say it does. He lives at Shoscombe Old Place.
You've been there?
My summer quarters were down there once.
Summer quarters?
When I was a medical student.
Tell me about Sir Robert Norbiton. What manner of man is he?
He nearly came within your province once.
Within my province? How was that?
There was a most unsavoury type. Sam Brewer.
The moneylender? The one who has premises in Curzon Street?
That's the fellow. It happened on Newmarket Heath. Norbiton was already pretty deep in, but he asked for an extension of credit. Brewer refused him, point blank. And he wasn't exactly discreet about it either. Norbiton saw red and took a horsewhip to him. Brewer was lucky to get away with his life.
What a remarkable character. Does he often indulge himself in that fashion?
He has the name of being a very dangerous man. He's just about the most daredevil rider in England. Second in the Grand National a few years back.
Yes, I remember it. The horse was, what was his name? Patroclus.
That's it. Yeah. He's one of those men who's been born out of his time. He should have been a buck in the days of the Regency. A boxer, an athlete, a plunger on the turf, a lover of fair ladies. And, by all accounts, so far down Queer Street that he may never find his way back again.
Capital, Watson. A perfect thumbnail sketch. I really seem to know the man. Now, can you give me some idea of Shoscombe Old Place?
No, I can't tell you about the house. It's supposed to go back centuries. But for the past 20 years, it's been the home of the Shoscombe Stud. The training quarters are there, too.
And the head trainer is John Mason.
How do you know that?
There's nothing surprising about my naming it, Watson. I happen to have received a letter from him. But tell me more about Shoscombe. I seem to have struck a rich vein.
There are the Shoscombe Spaniels, of course. You hear of them at every dog show.
No.
They're the most exclusive breed in England, and the special pride of the lady of Shoscombe Old Place.
Sir Robert Norbiton's wife, I presume?
Good Lord, no. Sir Robert has never married. Just as well, I should think, considering his prospects and his reputation.
He lives with his widowed sister, Lady Beatrice Falder.
You mean that she lives with him?
No. That's not what I meant at all. The house belonged to her late husband, Sir James Falder. Her brother has no claims on it at all. His sister has only a life interest in the estate, and it reverts to her husband's brother at her death. Meantime, she draws the rents every year.
Ah, her brother Robert, I suppose, spends said rents.
That's about the size of it. He's a devil of a fellow. I must lead her a most uneasy life. Yet I have heard that she's devoted to him.
And to the Shuscombe Spaniel.
And to the Spaniels, yes. But what is the trouble at Shuscombe?
Here, I expect, is the man who will enlighten us. Mr. John Mason?
The same. Mr. Holmes?
I'd kindly take a seat, Mr. Mason.
Thank you.
This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Your servant, Doctor.
Mr. Mason?
You received my note, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, I received it, but it explained nothing.
It was too delicate a situation to put the details down on paper. Rather too complicated. I could only talk about it face to face.
So here we are, Mr. Mason, at your disposal. Pray proceed.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. First of all, I think that my employer, Sir Robert, has gone mad.
This is Baker Street, not Harley Street.
What makes you say so?
Well, sir, when a man does one queer thing, or two queer things, there may be a meaning to it. But when everything he does comes into that category, then you begin to wonder. I believe Shoscombe Prince and the Derby have turned his brain.
Shoscombe Prince is a colt you're running?
The best in England, Doctor. I should know if anyone does. I've had my eye on him since he first got up on his legs. Now, I'll be plain with you, for I know you're a gentleman of honour and it won't go beyond this room.
That goes without saying, Mr. Mason. Yes.
Thank you, Doctor. Sir Robert has got to win the Derby. He's up to his neck in trouble, and it's his last chance. Everything he could raise or borrow, he's put on Shoscombe Prince. And at fine odds, too. Oh, you can get 40s now, but it was nearer the 100 when he began to back him.
But how is that when you say that the horse is so good?
The public doesn't know how good he is. Sir Robert has been too clever for the touts. He's been taking the Prince's half-brother out for spins around the park. You can't tell them apart. But there are two lengths and a furlong between them when it comes to a gallop.
Sir Robert evidently knows what he's about.
He thinks of nothing but the horse and the race. His whole life is on it. He's holding off the money lenders till then. If the Prince fails him, he's finished.
It seems rather a desperate gamble. Perfectly rational. So where does the madness come in?
Why, Mr. Holmes, you only have to look at him. I don't believe that he's had a wink of sleep this past month. He's down at the stable at all hours, day and night. His eyes are wild, staring out of his head. And then there's his conduct towards Lady Beatrice.
What is that?
Sir Robert and his sister always used to be the best of friends, Mr. Holmes. They had the same tastes, and she loved the horses as much as he did. Every day at the same hour, she'd drive down to see them. And above all, she loved the Prince. And he would prick up his ears as soon as he heard the wheels on the gravel, and he'd trot out each morning to her carriage to get his lump of sugar. But that's all over now.
Why?
Well, she suddenly seems to have lost all interest in the horses. For a week now, she has driven past the stables with never so much as a good morning.
You think there's been a quarrel?
I'm certain of it, and a bitter, savage, spiteful quarrel at that. Why else should he give away her pet spaniel that she loved as if it were a child?
He gave it away?
Only a few days ago, Sir Robert gave it to old Josiah Barnes that keeps the Green Dragon.
Where is this inn?
It's 3 miles off at Grendel.
That certainly does seem very strange.
How's Lady Beatrice taken it? Did she seem distressed?
She's scarcely seen about the house at all now. And Sir Robert never goes near her. With her weak heart and her dropsy, she could never go far without him, and he used to spend 2 hours every evening in her room. And well he might, for she's been a rare good friend to him.
And that's all over now?
Yes, Doctor. And she's taken it badly. She's brooding and sulking, and she's drinking like a fish.
Did she drink before the estrangement?
Well, she was used to take her glass, but now it's often a whole bottle of an evening.
Scarcely advisable in her condition.
Now, you're certain of this?
Stevens, the butler's told me. It's all changed, gentlemen, and there's something damn rotten about it.
Tell me, Mr. Mason, who keeps her ladyship company?
Well, there is her maid, Carrie Evans. She's been with her